Zina, I'll always love you.
Welcome, everyone, to Xena New Bruce Podcast, a.k.a. XMU. My name is Cass, and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 189. This podcast show is all the Xena New Bruce subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So, hello, and welcome back, everyone, and welcome back to those of you who are just coming back from the Xena convention. I so envy you. But maybe next year. Want to get into the show. We've got a few things going on, cooking in the pot, so to speak, so we're going to get right into it. First and foremost, the song snippet here on this week's show, thank you to Vanessa, is All This in Heaven 2 by Florence and the Machine. Okay, on the book recommendation this week, over at Boldstroke Books, which of course is where sometimes we go, we've got Fugitives of Love by Lisa Girolami. I hope I said that right. If not, I do apologize for that. In the description, it says, Brenna Wright loves discovering new artists and showing their work at her New York art gallery. Recluse Sinclair Grady creates magnificent stained glass windows from rare sea glass while coveting her privacy on the secluded beaches around Hermaquid Point in Maine. When Brenna comes across Sinclair's work, she knows instantly that this is one of her biggest finds. But for Sinclair, one horrific secret from her past makes her reluctant to leave her self-imposed exile and take a chance with Brenna. And when feelings are up between them, their chance at love sets in motion a potentially devastating series of events that could not only sabotage their relationship, but could destroy Sinclair's life. So that's by Lisa Girolami. I hope that's the way I said it right. And it's called Fugitives of Love. And of course, I'll have a link on my show notes for you.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
But all in the World Wide Web. As most of you might not know, the Xena convention, the supposed last Xena convention, was just recently held, and it wound up being that it's not going to be the last one, that maybe next year will be the last one, but that's not even definite yet. But anyway, over at AUSXIP, Mary D. has posted a bunch of photos of Renee, Lucy and Renee, pics from the play, that there was a play that one of the people had written up, Catherine Fugate, if I remember right, and Renee actually popped in and did her part in the play, and there was a scene where Gabrielle proposes to Xena, who was actually played by someone else, and it was really good, apparently, for everybody who went there. They just absolutely loved it. There was a lot of good pictures taken, so you need to check that out over at AUSXIP, and out on the World Wide Web for the rest. Renee hasn't posted anything on her website yet, but she's been busy doing, obviously, the Xena convention and other things. So we don't have any updates aside from that at the moment. But I do have a link request or an announcement of several links from over at Rio at the Xena Library and the Conqueror's Library, which, of course, I'll have links on my show notes for you to access. And it's part and par of the circle, I guess, if you would call it, of the Xena ring circle that we have of all the Xena sites and people who continue like I do with podcasts and stories and things like that. One of them you well know is from the C-Spot Reviews and the Cocktail Hour, which I've mentioned here before. So this is a new one. This is called the Xena Library in the Conqueror's Library. So check it on out. If you have any suggestions or comments or anything about that, please send them an email, you know, or send them to me and I'll forward it to them kindly. And, go out and enjoy more stuff. Okay, in the movie review this week, it's not necessarily a movie review. It's actually a documentary. And, of course, I'll have a link on my show notes for you. And it's over at onemorelesbian.com. And I mentioned this before, but not specifically this particular section of it. But this is about Shelley Wright, the famous country music star who came out being gay. And this is the trailer showing some of her personal video diaries that she made regarding her transition from being one of the most popular country music singers out there, and then to face the critique and criticism and bashing that we all receive in our lifetimes because she came out. So this trailer gives a little peek as to what the movie's going to be about. And it's not very long. It's only about 2.5 minutes long. But it's something that I definitely recommend everybody take a look at. It's, like I said, it's only 2.5 minutes long, so you might take you 3 minutes. But have a look at it, definitely. And I know I'll definitely be one when the video or movie comes out, or her documentary, full documentary film on this, to either purchase it or download it or watch it.
Well, if that is the worst thing that happens today, I'll be thrilled.
Okay, I haven't really done this for quite some time. I've actually been, in absentia doing the show. But I'm just going to give you a little preview or a sneak peek of what's been going on over here. We've recently been having a torrential rain. Torrential as in massive flooding and landslides and things like that. So, my partner, of course, had to leave work one day, and 15 minutes after the road she passed through, it actually collapsed. They had to close the road. So, and I thank God above that she made it through. But part and par of that is because we live across from a river, and the lake is in the background. When it floods, it really floods. And if anybody who knows about being near water, when it floods, nature does all wonderful and kind things. I used to live in Florida, so I have a big background in regards to knowing when water levees and all that thing happens. But this one was a piece of the cake, because we had crabs coming into our house. And not edible crabs, but the little tiny, 2-3 inch size crabs. And of course, the cat went nuts playing with it. But it was another thing to be able to find them. But it was another thing not to be able to find them. And then the humidity and heat that we've been having. Oh, my God. Does that stink when they die? Just letting you know. Follow your nose. The nose always knows. So that was that's what we've been having, the highlight of this week. Oh, and yeah, during this torrential rainstorm and stuff, we still haven't had our roof fixed. So just to give you an idea of what's been going on. So we're going to get in with the show. So we continue on with Warrior Mine. I'm your host, Cass, and of course I'll have a link on the show notes for you to read it along or read ahead. Friday morning arrived with a light, misty rain falling. Are you ready? Znifrin asked from just inside the porte-cochere of the crematorium. Taking a deep breath, she answered, I guess I'll ever be, and gave a slight shrug, proceeding into the building where a short ceremony would be performed for Tabitha, and then she would be sent off to her final fate. Afterwards, Zanifa had arranged for her restaurant to hold the wake and was inside with a few who had chosen to attend.
Zanifa, thank you for all of this,
Frank said as he stood with her and a few of Tabitha's co-workers.
It is not necessary, Frank. The least I could do for her memory.
Well, I know that Tab appreciates it very much. Speaking of, where is she?
He looked about.
She excused herself to the restroom. She said she would return momentarily.
Zanifa looked at her watch and felt an odd sense come over her.
I just haven't seen her since we got in.
Suddenly, Zanifa turned and strode, quickly heading towards the restrooms, a sense of panic overcoming her. As she headed towards the back of the restaurant, she could see the cooks and waitstaff looking to the back dock entrance.
What has happened?
She demanded to know.
Woman, she went by in blur, out door,
one of the cooks said in broken English, pointing out the door. Zanifa went out the door, a panic seizing her heart, as she caught the scent that she knew belonged to Kate.
Ugh.
Tim moaned from the seat of the car she sat slumped in.
Soon, Tim, soon. You'll be fine.
A voice familiar yet growing distance said to her as the motion of the car and the painter ahead caused her to pass out again.
Mr. D'Olympia, Frank,
Zanifa said with an urgency to her voice.
Zanifa. So where is... Come with me.
She interrupted and turned, demanding with her voice to be followed. Once inside her office door, she closed the door.
She has been taken.
What? What are you talking about?
Kate. What? Who? Where?
He angrily shouted as he rose and dropped its drink to the floor.
Just now, a car was driven away and I believe Kate was in it. She has been abducted.
Zanifra! We have to find her! Call the police!
I already have. They are sending two detectives Kate has spoken to.
Where the hell are they?
He shouted.
Frank, please, sit down. I'm going to explain to the guests what has happened. The detectives will want to talk with them when they arrive. Meanwhile, I need you to be calm. I will send in a drink for you.
Zanifra, she's all like...
I know.
Please, Zanifra, I'll give you any...
No. Do not talk, Frank. She will be fine. I stake my life on it. I will do what I must to help.
Zanifra turned and exited her office, leaving him alone for the moment. After the detectives left, Zanifra drove Frank home.
Please stay here.
How can I when my baby...
Frank, I only say it as a courtesy, but mark my words. I am telling you to stay here in no uncertain terms. Do not allow anyone in, only the detectives. Do you understand?
The cold, harsh tone she spoke made him nod in submission.
No one.
She turned away, striding to a car, returning to her now vacant restaurant. Inhaling in the air, she growled,
Not again.
Ted blinked groggily as she stirred in pain.
It's okay. Here, let's try to get you to sit up.
Said that voice again, and now a blurry face.
Ow, my head!
Tay rubbed the back of her neck.
Yeah, that's the after effect of the pinch. But it'll go soon.
Who? Madeline?
Tay said incredulously.
Why?
You. Your scent. You're driving me to do this. I don't know why. It's... I've got to have you.
She replied, getting up from crouching down in front of her, and began to pace.
I can't do anything without wanting you.
What are you talking about? Where am I?
She looked about.
You don't have to worry about that. All that matters is that we're together. You'll see. You want to be with me like I do with you.
What are you talking about? I don't want to be with you.
Yes, you do. And you want me to bed you. And it will be the sweet and innocent. Not like the streetwalker you called friend.
You did it! You killed her!
Tess said, retreating back in horror.
She didn't appreciate you. She was a whore. If it wasn't me, it would have been someone else.
You didn't have to kill her!
Tay yelled at her.
It's just part of what she brought out in me.
What are you saying?
Certain types bring out certain reactions. Mostly bad. Well, actually, all types are bad. But you make me crazy. Your scent, it drives my blood to boil in want. My skin tingles around you and my sex aches, and it drives me through the roof. I need you. I need to feel you, taste you, to lay with you and feed of you.
Madeline ranted. Tess skin crawled at the notion.
No, I will not!
She yelled.
Yes, you will, whether you want to do it willingly or by force.
What? You intend to rape me?
Ted was incredulous.
That's harsh. But if the need arises, so be it, yes.
Madeline said with a nonchalant shrug.
No!
Ted jumped up. Faster than Ted could blink, Madeline was holding her in a vice-like grip.
Ah, princess. And don't think to scream. I know your type. So I've got us in a warehouse far away from listening ears. Until I can get you safely to a more, shall we say, appropriately intimate location to consummate our need of each other?
No!
Ted tried to struggle, angry tears escaping her eyes as the painful grip hurt her wrists. Madeline inhaled deeply as she leaned in to smell her hair and neck.
I know what it is. Your blood. Your blood is innocent. You've not lain with anyone,
she said, finally coming to the realization of what Tab and her argument had bid over, and losing her grip a fraction. Ted tried to move again, but was still pinned by her hands.
Oh, what a pleasure it will be, Ted. You'll see. I will be gentle, and it will be magical.
Ted tried to scream, but Madeline put a hand over her mouth.
Don't make me mad, Ted.
She went to remove her hand, and Ted screamed anyways. Then things went black. Again. Having many skills, Zeniva was able to follow the trace scent that was uniquely Ted. She was just nearing a few warehouses when she heard voices and could smell adrenaline in the air.
Man, you think you can take over our crib and just fucking walk out carrying some bitch and we gonna let you?
A young hoodlum told Madeline, as approximately five of them were surrounding her as she carried Ted to her car.
Out of my way, peasant, and I'll let you live.
Madeline snarled.
There's five of us and ain't one of your bitch. You ain't gone nowhere till we had our fun. We's got an initiation tonight, and yes, gonna be the skill.
Then motioning towards Tez's limp form,
she gonna be the prize.
Zeniva stood in the shadows as more of the hood's companions arrived to their apparent club that Madeline had inadvertently chosen to use.
I would leave now,
she said from within the shadows. Several members turned to see who spoke. As if out of an old classic black-and-white movie, Zeniva emerged from the dark, her full-length black coat open with an overly high collar, accentuating her chiseled jawline, her wine-colored silk blouse shimmering in the streetlight's illumination. She moved as if on a casual stroll.
They're the ones who should leave, as well as you. Ted doesn't want you. She wants and needs me.
Man, you're a bunch of lizards. That's fine. We'll sort you with what you needs to know,
the so-called leader said as he hip-topped his way forward, grabbing his crotch.
Stop!
Zenifra's cold voice commanded.
Leave this place now, and you will have much to appreciate later. I guarantee. Man, this here's our crib. You ain't telling us what to do.
He motioned with his hands like he was showing her the words he spoke in an attempt of intimidation.
You should leave. This doesn't concern you.
Madeline said as she started walking again to her car to put Ted in.
Bitch, you ain't gone nowhere.
Another hood stood in front of her path, crossing his arms. With one arm she held Ted's limp form cradled to her, and with the other she flung the man out of the way, where he landed several feet away. Zeniva walked a few feet closer.
I would suggest you place Kate gently on the ground and walk away from her, Madeline.
Or what? You think you know me to tell me what to do? No. No one knows or owns me, and you have no idea what I am capable of.
Madeline's voice rose, and she became agitated.
Bitch, you gonna pay for that?
The leader came after her. She picked him up by the shirt collar and flung him over her car.
Put Kate down,
Zeniva ordered with a voice of authority that dripped with anger. Madeline laid Ted down gently as she started to awaken. Madeline, in a blur, was around the car and holding the leader up again.
You'll be my example to them,
she said as her face contorted and she bared her elongated canines. The man's eyes widened in horror.
Bitch! Get off me!
He yelled.
Kate? Kate!
Zeniva was at Kate's side instantly, checking her neck for signs of the mark of possession.
What? Zeniva?
Shh. I have you. You are safe.
Zeniva went to lift her.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Madeline snarled while she held the now limp body of the man by the shirt with both hands, and casually tossed him to the floor, licking her lips of the dripping blood but never turning her head to look.
Do not cross me, Madeline. Leave Kate alone and go back to where your master made you. There I will leave you be.
Zeniva stood slowly.
You're what?
Madeline laughed, the laugh of a crazed woman.
You have no idea what I am to threaten me, or...
Before even Madeline could begin to utter the next word, Zeniva was right next to her, startling everyone, including Madeline.
It is you who has no concept of who I am.
Zeniva emphasized the word I, as she said in an almost whisper, standing mere inches from Madeline, causing her to jump.
Man! That crazy bitch is a vamp! She killed Biggs!
A young hood pulled a gun and fired at both of the women, faster than Ted could see, or even for Madeline to track. Zeniva had all the hood's guns in her hands.
Go now. You never beheld any of this.
or your lives will be forfeited,
she said as she dropped the gun to the pavement at her feet.
Bitch! Get her!
The hood yelled as he lunged at her with the rest of the members attacking as well. It was only a minute, but that's all it took. Xenifra had dispatched several men, several of them by a stab with their own knives, which they had attempted to use on her, and two with broken necks, using her formidable martial arts skills. Madeline had killed four by ripping their throats open to die a horribly painful death of blood loss. Xenifra stood in front of Katya protectively, as she lay still on the ground in shock at what was happening and what she was witnessing.
So you think your little kung fu is going to stop me? So you think your little kung fu is going to stop me?
Madeline sneered while still breathing heavily from her rampage.
It is not kung fu, and no, that is not going to stop you.
Xenifra replied while standing stock still.
Exactly. So get out of here and leave Kata to me where she belongs.
Madeline moved forward while brushing off her arms in a cocky manner. Xenifra's tone was ice-cold and bitter.
Kata is not a possession to give over to you, and she does not belong to you. She will be mine, and you'll be dead to say otherwise.
Madeline lunged at Xenifra at a speed that caused Ted to think she had disappeared. But Xenifra was faster and sidestepped her before Madeline could stop. Ted was startled by a loud crash behind her, and turned to find Madeline in a heap on the pavement, unable to have stopped her momentum forward.
Madeline, last chance. Leave.
Xenifra said solemnly. A growl of frustration was all that was heard from Madeline as she attacked again. Ted could only see past glimpses of images as the two of them traded blows so quickly she could not actually see them. Xenifra outspeeding and hitting Madeline in all facets, with only a lucky hit landing on her. Xenifra finally had had enough and took Madeline by the throat with one hand, lifting her completely off the ground.
Who? What? Are you?
Madeline croaked.
I am Xenifra, general to Pharaoh Seti I. I am Hecate's warrior and guardian of her word. I am your sire's sire by millennia.
Madeline was struggling like a child in Xenifra's grip, kicking and flailing about, and froze at these words as her blood ran cold, looking up into ancient steely blue cold eyes.
You.
You are my regret on this earth, Madeline, and you will be no more.
With that, Xenifra's canines elongated, holding Madeline's neck to one side. Xenifra plunged her bite into Madeline's throat, ripping it open. Madeline's legs thrashed as she tried to escape her doom, but was to no avail. She grew weak and went limp, feeling the blood drain and escape from the wound inflicted on her neck. She watched through a fog-filled haze as Xenifra reached inside her coat, pulling out a small katana and then letting go of her body. Madeline watched from her severed head on the ground how her body stood for only a brief moment, then fell to its knees and collapsed to the side, headless. Then all went black. Xenifra stood still, and then spat out the blood still in her mouth. She took a handkerchief from inside her coat, wiped the katana clean, placing it back inside her coat, and then removed the vial. Sprinkling some liquid onto the two pieces of Madeline's body, she spoke some words that the linguist of old languages would cry to have heard spoken so eloquently.
Legaras dimendien u vampir macar. Regatin meo acoremas meo.
Maker of vampire, fear my wrath. The regret I made, I correct. Smoke began to rise from the body, and after a few moments, the body burst into flames, all traces. Body, clothes, and blood were gone. Ted blinked. One moment, Madeline was there threatening her life. Next, she was a vampire and attacking men, and Xenifra. And then, she was up in smoke. She looked from the spot where Madeline's body was, then around to those of the dead hoodlums, finally up to Xenifra, who stood with a most forlorn look and a look of sadness upon her face.
I don't...
Ted was confused and disoriented. She tried to stand up, only to have her lights go out.
Honey, come on now. Wake up for me, pumpkin, please.
A strained and nervous voice begged. Ted could hear the voice, then slowly opened her eyes and closed them again from the pain when the light hit him.
Ow!
Phew,
Frank said, relieved.
You're safe, honey.
What? Where am I?
Ted opened her eyes slowly. Looking about it, she realized she was in her own room.
Xenifra found you and brought you home. She said there was some sort of kidnapping in the hoodlums fight.
Ted recalled the images of what she had seen, and tried to reconcile them with what Zinifra had done.
I'm just glad you're safe. I owe Zinifra a debt that I can never repay. She said you'd be fine. She swore her life on it.
Frank said while still holding Tess' hand from the edge of the bed.
Where is she?
She asked as she sat up.
She had to go talk to the detectives downtown.
Oh.
Tess said sad, yet a bit relieved. She didn't understand what was going on or what had happened, and needed time to sort things out.
Dad, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to jump in the shower and then lay back down.
She said, rising up from the bed.
Sure, honey. I'll get Mim to bring you over a tray of your favorite soup and sandwich. You just rest up and I'll let the detective know you'll talk to them tomorrow.
Thanks, Daddy.
Sure, bumpkin.
He leaned over to get her kiss on the head, turned and left the room. Shaking her head, Tess said to herself,
What the hell is going on?
Thank you, Miss Olympia, for coming down. We hope you're feeling better.
Detective Robinson asked while sitting at the meeting table.
Have you been seen to by the doctors, we hope?
Yes, Detective, I'm feeling better. Thank you for asking. Just a shock, I guess, at all. The doctor says I'm fine.
Great. Well, we'll get right to it, then.
Detective Hardman stated.
By all means.
So, after the funeral, you were at the wake being held at the Pantheon restaurant?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you remember?
I was washing up at the sink after coming out of the toilet, when I felt a hand at the side of my neck. It all went black then. When I woke up, I was in what looked like a warehouse, but it had sofa and tables and stereo equipment. I remember really bad headache and pain in my neck here.
She motioned with the hand to her shoulder and neck area, where there was a visible bruised area.
When I looked up, Madeline was kneeling in front of me.
Madeline? As in Miss Tresledge?
Asked Detective Robinson.
Yes. She said something about the effects of a pinch hold or something. Then she started ranting about having to have me.
Tess shuddered at the thought again.
Have you?
Detective Harmon asked with a quizzical raised question.
Yes. Either willingly, or by force if need be.
Are we talking...
The detective tried to clarify the statement.
She intended to rape me, Detective. I told her I would never be with her willingly.
Tess interrupted.
I got up to leave, but she held me down with an incredible amount of strength. She said it would be better than what happened to Tabitha.
Tears escaped her as the name of her best friend.
She confessed to killing Miss Moore?
Detective Robinson interjected.
Yes, that supposedly Tab made her do it and deserved what she got. If not her, it would have been someone else.
What happened next?
Detective Robinson asked as she rose and offered Tab coffee and water.
I asked her where I was. I was going to scream when she covered my mouth. She told me we were in a warehouse until she could move us to a more intimate location to consummate her belief of us wanting to be together. When she removed her hand, I screamed, and then I felt a pinch to my neck again. I came to as someone put me on the ground next to the car. I remember hearing raised voices, shouting, and seeing several men surrounding the area. I then saw Zinifra standing over me, checking to make sure I was okay. I then heard shouting, a gun go off, and then fighting. I could only see his bit as the car blocked my view. I was still dizzy. I saw Zinifra walk towards me as I tried to get up. I don't remember anything after that. The next thing I know, I was waking up in my bed at home yesterday. Apparently, the doctor had been in, checked on me and gave me some painkillers, which kept me out until I woke up late yesterday afternoon. Tess finished taking a sip of her water. The detectives were writing notes, the recorder still taped.
Can you remember how many people were there?
Detective Robinson looked up from a notepad.
I vaguely remember seeing two to the right of me, and just one over the hood of the car. I know more they were there from the voices coming behind the car.
One, two, or more voices?
Easily more than two.
Did Miss General do anything?
What do you mean?
Did she try to talk to someone?
Yes, she said that they should leave now. It would be safer for everyone.
What was the response to her and by who?
Their leader, I guess. Said it was their crib and some other things that I couldn't hear, as several of them were shouting things.
Did Miss Tresledge say anything?
Yes, she said that the same thing to them and to Zinifra.
Did either one of them have a weapon?
There were guns that a few of the thugs had, but I didn't see anything on either Zinifra or Madeline.
Do you remember seeing any stray dogs, or if the men had them with them?
No, why?
Detective Robinson nodded to the other detective.
Several of the men had their throats ripped open.
Oh my God!
Tick covered her mouth with her hand in shock.
What happened to the others?
Some had their necks broken. Others were stabbed with their own knives, as far as we can tell. But they're all dead.
Oh, no.
Miss Olympia, did you see either Miss Tressage or Miss General fight with these men? Te hesitated a moment and thought.
No. As I was behind the car and they were in the dark, I remember seeing feet under the car shuffling back and moving like in a fight, but I couldn't see what was happening or who it was.
Do you remember how many shots were fired?
She
looked off to the side, trying to remember.
I think I heard two shots when Zenifa asked him to leave again.
After that?
Detective Harmon tried to encourage her to continue.
Just a fight. Oh, yeah. Then I remember Madeline on the ground, as Madeline flew over me.
Pardon?
Both detectives said at the same time, incredulously.
She tried to attack Zenifa, and she sidestepped her lunge and flew over me, almost hitting the warehouse door.
So Miss General and Miss Tressledge fought over you?
Yes. They traded blows, and then I remember seeing Zenifa walking towards me. That's when I tried to get up, but I passed out, I guess.
Tess shrugged her shoulders.
Have you heard from either of them?
No. My dad said Zenifa called a checkup on me after speaking with you. Nothing from Madeline.
Tess said her name with disdain and discomfort. The detectives continued to write while Ted drank the rest of her water.
What did Zenifa say happened?
We're sorry, Miss Olympia. We cannot divulge the information. Is there anything else you can remember?
No. I tried to order my thoughts. You know, who, what, where kind of things. But I've given all I can. Except stuff even I can't believe.
She thought to herself.
It's quite an amount, Miss Olympia. We really appreciate you coming down and helping us out as much as possible.
Well, at least I know who did that to Tab. It was that bitch Madeline, Tess said angrily.
We intend to find her and investigate this to the full extent of the law, Miss Olympia. We'll have a follow-up, Miss Tressledge, and we have asked a judge to rescind her passport and notify Interpol. If Miss Tressledge tries to go anywhere, we'll know about it. In the meanwhile, we'd like to have security details set a watch on you.
What? You think she'll try again?
Tay was outraged at the suggestion, especially since she had yet to assure herself of what had happened and that Madeline would never bother her again.
We'd rather not take the chance, Miss Olympia.
Detective Harmon tried to explain.
No, I don't want to live my life in a bubble, nor do I want a watchdog. No offense.
Tess said, shaking her head.
Please reconsider, Miss Olympia.
It would... No, I mean it. I don't want anyone following me or lurking over my shoulder. It would creep me out and scare me even more than thinking that she could come back again.
Which Tess knew could never happen, after seeing her body in pieces and going up in smoke.
Okay, but if you feel different or something changes your mind, please let us know.
Detective Robinson acquiesced.
I will. Is there anything else you need from me?
Tess asked, rising from her seat.
No, not right now, Miss Olympia. We have your statement, and we'll get it typed up, and if you could stop by any day to stop and review it and sign it, we'd appreciate that. Otherwise, if we need you, we'll be in touch.
Both detectives rose.
Okay, I'll be back tomorrow then. Thank you.
Thank you, Miss Olympia. Be safe.
Detective Harmon shook a hand, as did Detective Robinson, once they escorted her to the door where a taxi waited for her.
Hey, Daddy!
Ted called out to her father after going home.
Yes, sweetie?
Do you have the curator's number at the Smithsonian Museum?
Yeah, I think I do. Why?
Just research, Daddy. Getting my mind off of things.
Good. Got to see you trying to get back into things. Pumpkin, can I ask you something?
Sure, Daddy.
What happened between you and Zenifa?
Tess's face could not hide the look of hurt, sadness, and confusion.
I just need some time to get over everything. I'm sure she understands.
She sounds so sad on the phone. It seems very concerned about you, honey. She's asked how you're doing, and I thought she was very interested in you.
What do you mean, interested and concerned how?
Well, she calls me every day at the office to get an update on your condition. She has asked me for permission to court you.
She what?
She saw me a while back, before we knew about Tabitha, and asked for permission to court you. She said not in the father's possession aspect, but in the potential suitor capacity. She believes in tradition and said she was going to ask you as well. Guess you never got the chance, huh?
No.
Shame, really. She seems like one who cares deeply only once in a lifetime.
Yeah, she does.
Ted said sadly in a bare whisper.
What's that, honey?
Oh, nothing. That number, Daddy? Hello, Professor Baxter. My name is Kata D'Olympia. I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions. My father, Frank D'Olympia, said you'd be most agreeable to a mythology geek such as me. Yes, he's my dad. No, I didn't know you were frat brothers.
I'll have to brim him on that little secret. Well, I'm looking for any information you might have on the goddess Hecate. Not just your run-of-the-mill history, but very deep historical data and anything on her priestesses or warriors. Yes, I'd be willing to travel there. When would... Well, I could be there tomorrow morning. Thank you, Professor. I'll be sure to give my dad your regards.
Ted flew up to Washington and spent the next week camping out in the archives, learning new tidbits of information she was not aware of. She then flew to New York, where the curator had set aside some information as a favor to Professor Baxter on her behalf. Finally, she returned home to pack for a flight to Wadi El Muluk.
Honey, where are you off to now?
Oh, research out at Wadi Daddy. I'm using some of my 6 months accrued vacation and just relaxing,
Tess said while packing.
Alone?
Frank asked, concerned.
Yes, Daddy, I'll be fine. No sign of madness for over 3 weeks now, so I say she's gone for good.
Tess had nicknamed Madeline that as part of her dealing process, had reconciled what she had seen that night and put fact to incidences as her research began to yield her some answers.
Yes, I know. Vicky's completely distraught over the whole incident.
Daddy, I'm very sorry Vicky's hurting and she had nothing to do with this, but I don't really care to hear about it.
Sorry, Pumpkin, I didn't mean to.
It's okay. How about you and I go have dinner out tonight? Just us two.
Great. You pick.
Ah, ribs it is.
How did I know?
He chuckled.
After a week in Wadi, Tay arranged a flight to a remote location near Lagina in Turkey, a temple. There she studied the markings in the temple with some of her notes, marking references and cross-matching symbols. The one that made her gasp was the marking where the altar once stood. It matched the hieroglyph in Zenifer's study. It was the mark bestowed on Hecate's chosen warrior. There were a few priestesses in the nearby modern-day temple that worshipped Hecate in this day and age, as the ancient temple was an archaeological landmark and not accessible to the general public. There, Tess spent a few days speaking with the head priestess, discussing her namesake, which earned her great influence points on getting highly guarded information, such as reading ancient parchments that had been archived to computer, and modern books, and even listening to stories handed down for hundreds of years, each fact confirming her suspicions more and more. On the day of her departure, Tess spoke with the head priestess and asked a question that took the priestess by surprise. The priestess smiled slowly, then gave a nod of her head. Tess said a gracious thank you to all, with a very kind donation attached to her goodbye, for their hospitality. Returning home with determination and resolution she never felt before.
Hello, may I speak with Miss General? It's Kate D'Olympia.
Good morning, Miss D'Olympia. Miss General is not available. May I take a message? Her secretary asked.
No, that's okay. Thank you.
Tay hung up and dialed Zenifer's home phone number.
Hi, Philippe. It's Kate D'Olympia. Is Zenifer home? No? Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
She hung up again and dialed a private number, which rang out and went to a voice message.
Where are you?
Tess said out loud while pondering what to do next. Zenifer sat in a tent a few miles from the remnants of one of the smaller archaeological digs, but was only interested in the site known to her and a chosen few officials. There was a small obelisk made of a black marble that sat upon a white granite slab. On the slab was inscribed ancient Greek letters mixed with hieroglyphics. The Egyptian government, having had granted a special permit for this one unique marker to Miss General's estate, in appreciation for several artifacts being returned from lands afar. Zenifer rose from her seat and walked barefoot out into the pre-dawn darkness. Though the temperature was well into the single digits, she wore only black silk gi pants with a sash around her waist and a deep purple silk sleeveless tunic, her long hair braided and held back with a leather strap. She walked to where the obelisk was and knelt down, sitting on her heels with her hands upon her thighs, with her elbows slightly away from her body, her head bowed. To her side lay a katana in an ornately decorated sheath. As the dawn approached, Zenifer began reciting an ancient, long-dead language, the greeting for another day, and an oath sworn to her patron goddess. Once completed, Zenifer slowly stood and began a series of moves that belonged to the ancient form of Tai Chi. Almost an hour later, the sun had risen and began its climb to its peak. Zenifer stopped with a bow towards the sun, then gracefully picked up the katana, and while holding it across both palms of her hands, she bent towards the obelisk and said some more words, but this was an utterance of a prayer. Unsheathing the blade, she laid the carved protector down and began an intricate dance of moves capable of severing head or limb from body with fluid grace. A small breeze caressed the cheek and shoulder of Zenifer, as if by a lover's hand, causing the warrior to slow and stop. Xenifra resheathed her blade, turned toward the obelisk, and bowed deeply. In an ancient tongue she spoke, "You grace me, my goddess." Slowly a beautiful woman shimmered to life beside her. "My Sertorian, your heart is heavy. Again." The goddess reached over, hovering her delicate hand over Xenifra's heart, but did not touch her. "I have many burdens," she replied. "I have watched over you. Why do you carry in these burdens, not of your doing?" "Because they are," she replied sadly. "The creature you vanquished was not of your blood, Xenifra," the goddess said, causing Xenifra to look up at her, confused. "That creature was wrought by the greed of man for power and immortality. It was of a sire, a mere infant to your age. You have left no such mark on mankind." Xenifra's brows furrowed in confusion, trying to reconcile what her goddess was telling her, and the realization that the guilt she had carried for that facet for so many years was for naught. "Now of the other burden."
"That was a foolish whim, and of great disrespect to the memory of my Anamakra."
She turned sad eyes towards the obelisk.
"Oh, my Sertorian, these millennia have taught me that to have found the other half of your soul, you are favored."
"Yes, I was favored, goddess, and to do what I have done is a great dishonor to that."
"But Archelios, master of the people, you punish yourself for a love greatly felt, but not of your soul."
Xenifra stood confused and with a bit of resentment at what she felt the goddess was implying.
"What do you speak of, my patron?"
"The love you had was your life's love, but not the love of your life."
"No, Riel was my all."
Xenifra's head snapped to the goddess, and then slowly she sank to her knees, laying both palms to the granite stone before her. "She was for your life then, my warrior, and she was not to be your Anamakra."
"No, no."
"The fate foretold that the warrior I chose to gift would walk the earth many turns before finding one of my blood to complete their soul."
What?
"Do you recall asking what I was seeking of you at the museum?"
"Yes."
Xenifra nodded, not looking up.
"Do you recall saying the word metanoia had not lost its thing?"
Again a nod.
"Of the endearment you so freely called the little serf, slipping through your hot-held walls, after asking me what I was doing, as you believe she is forbidden to you?"
A heavy sigh escaped the warrior.
"She is more than what you see, Sertorian. Her name is Kate d'Olympia, my namesake from Olympus."
The warrior's eyes slowly widened at the sudden realization of her name.
"She reminds you of both Riel and me in features and personality and character."
Xenifra looked at her goddess, then off into the distance, while recalling a memory both past and present.
"She is fierce, intelligent, strong, vibrant, passionate, and innocent."
"She is someone I should not touch."
"Why do you say such things? When I gifted you, my last words to you were that there would come someone who, by the fates and my blood, would cause you to unknowingly give away your most guarded possession."
"There is nothing I possess aside from your journal that I guard."
"Oh, my warrior, I disagree. She will have a choice to make that you will offer."
"What do you speak of? What is it I guard to give, and what choice will she have to make?"
"The choice you will offer will come because of who you are."
The goddess began to shimmer and fade.
"It is the reason for your being here. It is where your burden lies, and it is what she now holds. Your heart."
The goddess placed a hand on Xenifra's chest above her heart, causing a shock as she disappeared. Xenifra stood in absolute bewilderment. Her patron had completely confused her world with only a few spoken sentences. She was lost in the notion that she needed not carry guilt for an evil she thought she sired into the world. She was confused in her feelings about her love lost, and the thought that she was not her soulmate, and now the confirmation of her feelings and soul match for the little blonde who'd managed to steal the one thing she believed was lost. After standing there frozen for hours, in thought, Xenifra shook herself from her stupor and walked back to her tent, placing her katana in its carrying chest and retrieving some clothes and a towel. Xenifra set up a makeshift shower,
On the top of the camper truck, she had affixed a large industrial-strength water bag that would warm with the heat of the sun and provide a refreshing cleanse. All she had to do was pull out a curtain rod that covered two sides in a 90-degree angle, with the truck side providing the third. She would undress and step between the truck and the curtain, leaving open one side to the desert. She would reach up and turn a nozzle that would allow water to flow through the showerhead by the use of gravity. Setting a tea kettle to boil, she stepped into her shower. By the time the kettle had boiled, Xenifa was dressing in a pair of darker shorts, button-down, short-sleeved tan camping shirt, and a pair of desert boots. She took her tea and sat under the canopy awning of her tent that could easily accommodate six people. She sat looking off into the distance, past the obelisk, at nothing. To be continued. Well, that concludes episode number 189 of XNU, and that is Warrior Mind by me, your host, Cass. If you have any suggestions or comments on the story, please send me an email at xena.uber@gmail.com. If you have any ideas for the show, movie suggestions, book suggestions, recommendations, song snippet suggestions, recipes, anything like that, send them in to xena.uber@gmail.com. One last thing, I do want to make an announcement, and this goes out to Jean and Cynthia. I want to thank Cynthia for all the help she's given me for her show, the show, and for her and her husband, who are celebrating their 25th, who have celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary on the 29th of January. It's late, but nevertheless, it is there. I want to say congratulations and a shout out to you both. I hope you enjoyed the convention. So with that, I hope everyone takes care and your life's in it. Bye-bye.